Hello, and welcome to Evergreen Pinecone Podcast, where we have conversations about issues that are important to you, like faith and family, religion and relationships, Christianity and the church, and a whole lot more. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy Art and Wes as they have a conversation on Evergreen Pinecone Podcast. Hello, everyone. Out there in podcast land, we were just cheering, thinking, there you are, coming out to listen to us. Glad to have you here. This is Art. I'm sitting here with Wes White. Wes, how are you doing? Wes, the jiu-jitsu pastor.
Oh, no, we're not going to talk about that, are we?
No, but that's what you are, right?
I don't know if I'm ready to identify myself in that way, but I do take jiu-jitsu on Monday and Wednesday nights.
That's just a little teaser for people to know something about Wes White.
Yeah.
Pastor Wes. So
I'll probably have people trying to attack me physically now to see what I know.
Or do you put chokehold on your small group members?
I would never do
In order to increase attendance. Well, today we're going to be talking about why the Exodus matters. Just coming off of a sermon series, The God of the Exodus, right? And I just want, before we start talking about that, I just wonder if you can tell us, answer that question first, why the Exodus matters. To here we are in the 21st century, so thousands of years ago, there's this story in the Bible. What difference does it really make?
Yeah, I think that's one of the key questions I always think about as I look at these old stories. You know, why does it matter at all? I mean, people look and they hear about slaves and making brick out of straw and throwing people into pits and, you know, selling them into slavery. And all that stuff is just like, what does this have to do with me? Like, why? And I don't think they even ask that, you know, audibly or even mentally. It's more just like, oh boy, you know, we're looking at this old story.
Right.
You know, and on the one hand, though, some of them, even like ones that are somewhat, I've had this experience with reading the classics. So I've read the Aeneid, which is one of the great classics of Western civilization. But I mean, it was a really hard read. And so how do you really have to be motivated to work your way through this. And I wanted to. Then on the other hand, I've read the Iliad. And I'm in the process of reading the Iliad, which is Homer's great story of the battle between Troy and the Greeks. And that's a really a good read. I mean, it's a pretty fun to read it if you like war and battle and jiu-jitsu, maybe. but you know, is there so on one side is we can like a good story that has good drama. But what does it matter that these people did this? So you can ask that in regards to what does it matter that the Greeks invaded Ilium or Troy? So those are questions we can ask. What is the significance of that? But then in the Bible, we believe that this is not just stories. This is God's own revelation. And the intention is certainly that we would grasp it and take hold of it and apply it to our lives. And that's what the Bible itself does. Because remember, the Bible's written over a long period of time, well over 1,000 years. At the beginning, they have these stories, and they're applying them to contemporary hearers 1,000 years later. So that shows us that maybe there's something there that we can apply to our lives. And so I would suggest that, and maybe we can get into this a little bit later, that there's significance of both in understanding the Bible and then also for how God works in our lives today.
Sure. So let's think specifically of the Exodus then. Which would I be thinking wrong if I said that Exodus might be the most well-known book in the Bible, maybe Exodus and Genesis? because of movies and because of Hollywood, if nothing else. Everybody seems to have heard Charlton Heston's kind of helped us.
Yes.
At least the older folks. I don't remember that.
But. Oh, they got, now we got Prince of Egypt.
True.
And then there was the more recent movie with, what's his name? Anyways, Christian Bale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was pretty much a total flop. Like, it was not, not it didn't do well.
Right, but it brought, but it brings it to the forefront.
Right, so people still talk about that. So yeah, and then of course, amongst Jewish people, they still celebrate this every year.
How so?
So it's they have the Passover celebration every year, right around the time of Easter, mm-hmm. and then that's not how they determine it, but just happens to coincide.
Right,
of course, but so they're bringing it up. Every year, this story. So you have amongst Jewish population, you have that, and then you have it in the wider culture. And then, of course, if you're familiar with the Bible, it's a pretty big event in the Bible. So that's an interesting thought, Art.
So, but even though it might be the most well known, let's still just for the sake of a few minutes, what is the Exodus? What are we talking about?
Well, one of the things I'm going to say later. Maybe if we get into it, is that the Exodus might perhaps be, in the Bible's viewpoint, Jesus' death and resurrection. So, but let's come back okay. to that. But the Exodus, as probably most people think about it, especially in light of the fact that there's a book in the Bible called Exodus, the Exodus event, as we think of it, occurs when Israel, the people of Israel, the Jewish people, move down to Egypt in order to be saved from a famine through Joseph. And that's a long story, which is very interesting as well. And they begin to grow and populate this land, and they become so extensive in the land, or so fruitful in the land, that the Egyptians at some point begin to fear that they could join with a foreign enemy and overthrow them. So they put the Israelites under the yoke of slavery. Mm-hmm. And even that doesn't slow down their fruitfulness in terms of multiplication of their numbers. And so then there is the attempt to kill every male child of the Jewish people. And the most famous incidence of that is Moses, who's born and who's hid and then put in a little basket or ark, as the word literally is in the Bible. Put him in a little ark on the water, and he's saved by the princess, the daughter of Pharaoh.
Right.
But that's in the context of the oppression that's taking place. And so then Israel begins to cry out to God, and God responds by raising up a deliverer, and that deliverer is Moses. And interestingly, Moses' name means drawn out. And so we could almost call him Mr. Exodus, or Exodus as being brought out, though has more of the attention of someone else pulling them out. So every time you hear the word Moses, think Exodus. So he's the Exodus guy. And so God meets Moses and tells him to go to Egypt to deliver the people out of the land of Egypt. And Moses does not want to do it. So Moses does not want to go back to Egypt. But eventually he listens to God and he goes back. And then the question is, how is Moses, this guy, going to deliver the Israelites out of Egypt? And the answer is, God's going to do it. The words speaks of his God's strong arm, his mighty hand is going to force the Egyptians to let them go. So God says, tell Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to let them go, but he's not going to listen to you. So I'm going to stretch forth my mighty arm and hand and I'm going to force him to do it. And how he did that was a series of 10 plagues that where he brought various miserable things upon the land and upon the people and upon the animals, and they suffered greatly, but they still refused to let the people of God go. Eventually, that leads to the 10th plague, which is the most famous, which is the night of the Passover, where God says he's going to, in a sort of lex talionis, you know, eye for an eye, hand for hand, tooth for tooth, take the firstborn son of every household. And in fact, Israel too could experience that as well, unless they take a little lamb, kill it, put the blood on the doorposts, and the angel of death will pass over the houses where there's the blood. But the Egyptians, taken as a whole, did not do that. And so their firstborn are all struck down, and it's just a horrible thing. And they finally, Pharaoh submits and says, get out of here and bless me too. And then they give gifts to the Israelites. And that very night, it says, they are freed from this terrible yoke, from the iron furnace, the Bible calls it, of Egypt. And they go out free, out into the wilderness, and start heading towards a new home, the promised land of Canaan. And so that's basically the story of the Exodus.
The story of the Exodus that we, the common that we know.
Yes.
The one that's in the book. And that matters to us. That's what we're going to get to, you know.
Right.
Why does it matter? I'm not sure this is the best place to start with that, but when you're building up the 10 plagues, and like the first, I think it's the first three, affected both the Egyptians and the Israelites. But then the next, what, six, the Israelites were spared from, so to speak, only affected Egyptians.
Right.
But what about the 10th one?
Yeah, the 10th one. It was going to affect them unless they had the blood of the lamb applied to the doorposts of the
house.
So
they were still under what, almost the judgment of the 10th plague, in
right.
a sense, unless they did that. What if an Egyptian put the blood over their, was it just?
Yeah, I don't see any reason. There's a couple things about that. I don't see any reason why the Egyptians couldn't do it. And there's another point where there's a warning about the giant hail that comes, where the Egyptians actually hear about the plague and bring their animals indoors, and when the plague comes, those who did that, you know, have their animals saved.
Right.
But those who didn't, you know, experience the judgment. So I think that the Egyptians would have known about it and would have had this opportunity. In addition, it's not just the Jews who go up. In Exodus 12, I think verse 38, it says that there's a mixed multitude. And so it's likely that some of the Egyptians actually embraced the God of the Exodus and joined with them and then went out.
Yeah, which would be understandable. They didn't want to stay. Plus everything in their land was pretty much decimated.
Yeah, right.
On the practical side, they may have gone too.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see that though? Again, you know, I don't know what direction you really want to take, but how do you see that affecting us? How do you compare that to the Exodus of Jesus, maybe? Or
yeah,
what are you talking about?
So how do yeah? So when we talk about significance, before we make kind of the jump to how does that affect me in my life today?
Yeah.
Maybe we talk about how that works its way through the Bible. Because what I want to suggest to you is that the Exodus theme is a big one in the Bible. And that all throughout the Bible you have a bunch of exoduses, a bunch of exits, and you have people that are stuck, and you have people that are leaving.
I guess even before the story you just told.
Yes, that's right.
Was Lot before the story you just told?
Yes. He had an exodus from Sodom, and Abraham has an exodus from his land where he's called to go out. He's kind of stuck in the idolatrous world, and God calls him out to a place of blessing. You also go back to Noah, who has to exit the old world, and he is saved through an ark, just like Moses. And that, yeah, so that's an Exodus. But then you move forward, and then you have Israel continually being brought under domination of foreign powers and look crying out to God again, wanting him to act in the same way. And the prophets continually take that language up. And one of the things that begins to develop is this idea, that's actually in the Pentateuch, in the first five books of the Bible, is the idea that Israel is not going to be faithful to the Lord, then they're going to be sent into exile. They're going to go back into other nations. But then God is going to come down again and lead them out through the wilderness back to their land. And like, that's everything in the prophets just about. So as you read the Old Testament, it's like those themes are all over the place. And then when you add to it things like, you know, traveling through the wilderness, the temple of the Lord, I mean, that begins in the wilderness when they build the tabernacle, the giving of the law, and so on. It's just that all those themes of the Exodus are just taken through the rest of the Bible and even the New Testament. I think one reason, though, we don't see that is because we think primarily in terms of Jesus. You know, the Jewish people, you know, they don't have the New Testament or don't recognize the New Testament as scripture. And so they think Exodus all over the place. And so I actually found it helpful at this point to one book called Reimagining, to read some Jewish writings, Reimagining Exodus, A Story of Freedom by Rabbi David Zaslow. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the beginning of me thinking about Exodus as a paradigm for thinking about how God works. Because, you know, they live in this story. And so they've taken it in and they talk about how does this affect our daily lives and what sort of Exodus are we experiencing and do we get stuck in places and so on. And so he really has a good explanation of scriptures, but then he also has a way of thinking about how we apply it. And then he also has a section about reading Jesus' death and resurrection as Passover as well. So he's a pretty ecumenical Jew. And so that's a book that's worth reading. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in studying these matters in greater detail. Have thought or
no.
Okay, then another book that takes it a little bit further into the New Testament is a book I would highly recommend for everybody. This is Echoes of Exodus, Tracing Themes of Redemption Through Scripture. And that is by Alistair J. Roberts and Andrew Wilson. And this was very helpful to me as I began to think through this biblically and to trace the themes. So it's very readable. It's got discussion questions. It's something you could do in a study. But let me go into where we see it in the New Testament. So this is the question that I like to ask. Is we think in terms of Jesus' death and resurrection is sort of the ultimate paradigm for thinking of salvation and God's work in the world. But the question that I would have is this: how did Jesus think of his death and resurrection? And there's a lot of places we could go for that. But when we see Jesus at the Mount of Transfiguration, where his clothes became like the sun, you know, he revealed his glory to Peter, James, and John, mm-hmm. on the Mount of Transfiguration. And Moses and Elijah appear, and he talks with them. So it's like he's brought back into heaven for a moment. And the Lord, his Father, appears in a cloud and says, "This is my Son, listen to him." And Luke has a little statement there where he says that Jesus talked with Moses and Elijah, and they discussed, in most translations, his departure. But if you look in the original Greek, The word for departure there is Exodus.
Wow.
Exodus. He spoke about his Exodus. So when he thought of his death and resurrection and ascension, he thought in terms of Exodus. This is really the Exodus. And there's another interesting parallel to that in 2 Peter chapter 1, because there Peter is referring back to the transfiguration event. And then he says, I'm going to keep reminding you of these things, and I'm going to make sure that after my departure, you will be reminded of them. And again, the word for departure in the Greek is, yes,
Exodus.
Exodus, right? So it's his Exodus. So he sees his leaving the world as an Exodus, and I would say from the presence of sin to the glory of heaven.
Yeah.
So that's, so that Peter must have picked up on that, you know, as he was there. So, and then you can go from there to begin, if you begin to look for these things, you'll see that all through the New Testament, these themes are continually present. That you see that the Lord has transferred us out of the kingdom of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of his Son. It's like an exodus has occurred. Even the term redemption goes back to Egypt, where God redeemed them out of the land of Egypt and brought them, made them his own. So the Lord redeems us. One of the most striking ones, because I've read it so many times and I've never seen this before, is Romans chapter 8, where the Apostle Paul talks about the creation itself is actually groaning, looking forward to the revelation of the liberty of the sons of God. And so I was thinking, like, well, where does this groaning language come from? It's from the Exodus, and especially in light of the fact that he says that the whole creation is going to be liberated. So it's like, there's the Exodus. In other words, the Exodus of everything. That's what Alistair Roberts and Andrew Wilson, they have a chapter on that, and they call it the Exodus of everything, that everything is going to be freed from all the decay, all the slavery, the bondage to destruction, to death that occurs is going to be taken away, and the whole creation is going to be freed from that. So anyway, that's a bit of what I see in the New Testament.
So the reason that it sounds like the reason that Exodus is such a well-known story is maybe not just because of Hollywood and because of the attention it's been given, but because it's woven into every bit of our lives. We're ultimately headed towards the Exodus.
Right.
Of course, then Jesus was the Exodus that you were talking about. But then along the way, we have an Exodus from like you said, from slavery to sin or whatever it might be.
Right.
It's just a huge part of who we are and what we are.
Right. Yeah, and it's apparently part of God himself. Like, you know, we have a lot of ways of talking about how human behavior and the human phenomenon, and, you know, we'll talk about anxiety and depression, and or, you know, different psychological terms, which I think are legitimate descriptions, and we should use those and know those. But the when we go to the Bible, it's like, well, what's God's kind of terminology here? Well, it's the Exodus. So you have something like, you're not just looking into a historical event. You're looking somewhat into the mind of God and how he thinks about the world. So I think that shows some of the significance for me.
Right. Wow. So, but what about the day-to-day? You know, I really don't like it when preachers especially, you know, just start talking about, well, this is all going to be good when Jesus comes back. I can't wait for Jesus to come back. Not that I wouldn't say that too, but I want to enjoy, you know, life here on earth. And I think everybody, I think that's the purpose too. So can we, you know, instead of pushing too much towards that final Exodus, how can we apply it right now, today?
Yeah, I think there's tons of ways. Besides just the fact that of salvation, as we talk about it, being saved out of sin, out of the kingdom of Satan into the kingdom of Christ. But I'm going to try and translate it a bit to put it in somewhat into our modern terms. Is like, I think that beyond just, you know, the broad themes of redemption and salvation, and then the redemption of the whole world and so on, we all are very familiar with these types of situations where we get stuck. And in a lot of those cases, we don't know how we're going to get out. And that could be a relationship, a job situation, a sickness, a particular sin that we're struggling with, a negative mindset that's destructive to our lives. It could be politics, it could be a nation, it could be a geopolitical situation. All these things are ways in which we get stuck. We experience these all the time. And it's easy to get upset or to become negative about these things and to think that there's no way out. Like, I've tried, I haven't gotten out, so there's no way out. And there's no way forward. And things cannot progress. And we can't see a better day. And one of the things that I think that the Exodus teaches us is that that's not true. Like, there's always hope. Even if there's not, sometimes there's things that we can do to get ourselves unstuck, right? So, like, we can play a part in this.
Right.
But even when there's not, there's still hope, because the God of the Exodus is still in the Exodus business. Like, he brings people out of these things. And I actually think it's worthwhile to say, why think of it this way? Because that's how God thinks of it. And so it's likely that those things are going to be paralleled in our lives. And so I think one of the things I challenge people to do is to go back to their lives and ask, what are some times you felt stuck? And then to see, how did God deliver you from that? Or has he delivered you from that? And so I look back in my own life and I see like very key points where it's like, man, I've been stuck for years in things. And then all of a sudden the Lord just comes down and changes the mindset, turns things around. And there's a sense of freedom and liberty, you know, from wrong habits or wrong thoughts, or, you know, moving a relationship that had been stuck into a new place where all of a sudden there's freedom and joy and we're connecting, you know, a place of loneliness to a place of, you know, where you find yourself, oh, now I'm connected, I've got a community, you know, all those things. And so I think like we can, if we begin to reflect on our lives in this way, it'll help us to see how God has worked in the past. And then when we find ourselves in those stuck situations again, in those narrow places, as Egypt means kind of a narrow place, because it is kind of a narrow place along the line of the Nile, and then we can move out into that open space. So when we get into that narrow place, we can have hope that we can move into a more open space, a place of freedom. So, and then one I've been reflecting on in my next series I'm going to do is on the wilderness, is that is also a very important phenomenon that we often find, is that you experience this Exodus, you experience this liberation, and you're like, everything's going to be good now. You know, I've had this problem for years, and now I'm healed, or now we're in a good place as husband and wife, or, you know, now it's a job that I like, you know, and then I'm making the money that I need to support my family. I've struggled for years. I've been able to move past this thing that has oppressed me, this sin or habit or whatever. And then we think, this is the great time. And then, and there is a joy. But then what happens next? The wilderness. God brings you out to this time of testing. And people are always shocked by it. I mean, maybe not always, but yeah. I mean, it's like, as a generality, like, people see this great movement, then all of a sudden something challenges them in a whole new way, or they're challenged with themselves in a way they've never seen before, or things begin to fall apart, and or they just have to wait on things. And so I think like that transition from Exodus to wilderness, from the joy of liberation to the time of testing and growth, is one that is huge, that is common to what God does, that is exactly what Jesus told us to do when he says, you know, if you're going to follow me, take up your cross daily, deny yourselves, you know, mm-hmm. prepare to suffer, you know, prepare for the wilderness. And even Jesus in his own life, after he was baptized, went to the wilderness for 40 days, just like Israel was there for 40 years, all kinds of Exodus language there.
Yeah.
And so I think that to understand that and to begin to think about that is a huge thing, because that's just generally what happens. It's generally how God works.
So that's a little preview of what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in your sermon series and on our next podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
As well. And I was just thinking about too, this might not, doesn't I guess apply to Jesus in the wilderness, but the Israelites and us often is, then when you're in that wilderness, you want to go back.
Right,
to the
yeah.
very thing that made you uncomfortable.
Even if it was bad, yeah. right? You're like, but you know, that was familiar. That was, now I'm in the unknown. I don't know what's going to happen. There's problems here I haven't seen before. And so like people want to go back to the old equilibrium, you might say.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, where it may not have been good, but at least it was somewhat expected, you know?
Yeah. Or maybe they fear what's to come too.
Right.
Even beyond that.
At least we had garlic. Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to live without garlic, so I can sympathize.
Yeah. Well, I always think it's something that speaking of that, then they always say, why did you bring us out here to die? But at no point was there ever imminent death looming for them.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they always saw this worst case scenario that wasn't even there.
Right.
So, you know, and I guess, I, you know.
That happens.
We could apply that certainly to ourselves.
Right. Yeah, so there's a whole realm of that stuff. And we'll, yeah, that's probably a good discussion for next time.
Yeah, stuff to get into. So, anything else that you think of when you're thinking of the Exodus? We've got a couple minutes here. We don't have to rush out.
Well, I think I've said probably enough about it. How about you?
I think we have it. I'm excited about next time. I'm excited about getting into the wilderness discussion.
You're ready to get into
the wilderness. Oh, I don't want to go in the wilderness.
I'm ready to get into the wilderness because the wilderness is great.
So that the next time I find myself in the wilderness, I won't be, it won't be unexpected, and I might have some application for how to work through it. Not necessarily to get out of the wilderness,
yeah, but to go deal through, with it better to when you're there. The
yeah. So thanks a lot for talking this morning, or this afternoon. Appreciate it. Why the Exodus matters. And we will talk again soon.
Sounds good.
See y'all next time. God bless you.